where the watch is squarely set in front of me, so no one should worry anything about this going over time. When Ren asked me to speak today on Super Bowl Sunday, I originally was going to say no, because if you ask anyone who knows me, anyone who knows Ira Wallach will tell you, if you ask my father-in-law, in fact, don't ask my father-in-law, they'll tell you that Ira Wallach does not know sports. He is not a sports guy. So I know I'm in Chicago, the city of sports, so just please forgive me for that. But with that in mind, so I was thinking to myself, how am I going to speak on Yom Norah the Kadosh on Super Bowl Sunday, having to give a shir and wanting to connect it to the Super Bowl, to what's going on? So I said to myself, okay, I don't know sports, I know commercials. So with that in mind, there are many different types of commercials and advertisements. I want to highlight two specific types. If you just, I don't know if these were handed out. Oh, very good. It's amazing what you can do at Kinko's. So I want to break down, I want to begin with, break down into two types of commercials. One I like to call the Michael Jordan commercial. We've got a handsome fellow over here holding the Nike sneaker. So there's one type of commercial where you have an athlete like Michael Jordan, and he's promoting something. It could range from computers to a sports drink. But the idea is that even though there's nothing intrinsic in that object, there's something intrinsic in the computer, in the laptop, that can make me like Michael Jordan, but the idea that the ad is trying to convey is that if you are going to use this product, I could be like Michael Jordan. There's a picture of Michael Jordan taking a swig of Gatorade and standing on one end of the court, taking the basketball, jumping from the other end of the court, and dunking. So if I drink Gatorade, I could be like Michael Jordan. So a thinking person wouldn't necessarily associate Gatorade with having the athletic prowess of Michael Jordan, but subconsciously you think that. It's going through your mind. So how do we view that through the lens of halacha? How do we view this case, the idea of this subterfuge of trying to subconsciously get into our minds that we could theoretically be like Michael Jordan, even though factually that's not true? The other kind of commercial I like to call the Hair Club for Men, the Rogaine commercial. The commercial is, you see this this consumer, I use this product, I use Hair Club for Men, and they're saying how this revolutionized my life. My life has never been the same. I have a great car, a great job, and everything is great. Now, the consumer who is buying into this product will not necessarily have those same results. And this is very, very subjective. The person who is presenting this is saying, for me, I did great with this. It was amazing for me. But for the consumer, they might not have that same result. Is that also, how does halacha view this? Is that going to be a problem? Is halacha sanctioned? I want to read an article, but actually not even an article, the title of an article. This is from the Wall Street Journal, January 29th. The title of the ad is, "The Day the Ads Overtook the Game." I don't think I need to say more. I think that part and parcel of again, as we mentioned, the Yom Norah v'Kadosh Hazeh on Super Bowl Sunday is commercials. That's what I look forward to. So with that stage set, let's take a look at the first source. What theoretically is the problem? What is the problem behind these commercials which could theoretically be misleading? The Gemara in Sefer Sfulin Daf Tzadi Aleph says, Omar Shmuel, Aser Lignov Das Habrios. There's a prohibition to mislead people. So let's flesh that out a little bit. What does that mean? So take a look at source 2. The Shulchan Aruch says in clearer words, Aser Liramos B'nei Adam, B'mekach u'memkar, o lignov daitam. It's prohibited to mislead someone through commerce, and we'll see that it extends beyond commerce. O lignov daitam, or again, to bamboozle them. Kugon yish mum b'mikcho. If, for example, that there is a blemish, there is a problem in the transaction that is being done right now, you have to inform the consumer, you have to inform the buyer that he is getting something which is substandard. Even if he may be a non-Jew, And you don't have to take a look, but in source 7, the Aruch HaShulchan, Rabbi Yechiel Michel Epstein, who was one of the major halachic poskim, which was one of the major poskim in Europe in the 1800s. So he says this even applies when there's not going to be any loss to the consumer. If, for example, the seller is selling to this buyer, Reuven sells to Shimon a car, and the consumer thinks that he's getting a 1998 Chevy, and in fact he's really getting a 2000 Chevy, or he's getting a 95 Chevy, and he's selling him the price of the 95 Chevy, but because he's misled, he thinks that he's buying a 98 Chevy. That's still a problem, even though there's no loss involved, even though it's the same value as it actually is valued at. There still could be a theoretical problem of Gnevas Das. But let's continue for now. So now we know this possible problem, this potential prohibition, Gnevas Das. Chapter and verse. What's the source? What's the biblical source for this? What's the theoretical problem? So if you take a look at the third source, the Ritva says, the first line in the third source, the Isser Gnevas Daito Shel Nafri, the prohibition to mislead a guy and also a Jew as well. Kosvu Ktas Rabosenu B'Shem Bali Atosfus. Some of the Bali Atosfus explain, Shu Isser Torah, this is a prohibition on a D'oraisa level, D'Nach Lemi D'Chsiv Lo Signovu. And where do we know it from? We know it from the prohibition to steal. And if you just take a look at the second to last line in this source, U'bitosefta, the middle of the line, U'bitosefta de Bava Kama, in the Tosefta, in the Braisos, in Bava Kama, Isa Shloshe Ganavim, there are three types of thieves. Godol Shebekulam, the worst one, Goni Dasabrios, one who's involved in this, in misleading people, in Gnevas Das. So fascinating. The Ritva explains, so what exactly is this the source, the biblical source, for this prohibition of misleading people? It's Gneva, which is a little bit novel, because generally speaking, we associate Gneva with actually physically taking an object, not to simply mislead people. So that's the Ritva's opinion, which is a chiddush. Now, going up against the Ritva, Rabbeinu Yonah, Shari Tshuva. It's kind of funny. Generally, Rabbeinu Yonah, the Shari Tshuva, is a work which is an ethical work, not generally brought into a discussion involving halacha. But sometimes you could find halachos that also come out of the Shari Tshuva. So Rabbeinu Yonah says, in the fifth source, Mi shemase es chavero, someone who misleads his friend, Lemor ki osa imo tova, he says to him that he did for him a kindness, O diber tova alav, or he spoke nicely to him, or he spoke nicely of him, velo asa, and in fact he didn't do this. He made the person perceive that he was doing him a kindness, and in fact he never did this kindness to him. The rabbis say, this is under the rubric of Gnevas Das. And it even applies to a Gentile. Wait for it. This is worse than even stealing from a Gentile. Because deceitful lips is a very terrible sin. And we're obligated to be truthful people. The Shari Tshuva clearly implies that the prohibition of Gnevas Das is not, as the Ritva explains, it's like taking an object, it's like stealing a car, it's theft, it's Gneva. The Rabbeinu Yonah explains that the prohibition actually is you have to be truthful. You can't lie. You have to tell the truth. And what's that based on? Take a look at the fourth source. The Pasuk says, Midvar Sheker Tirchok. We have to distance ourselves from falsehood. The Naki Vitzadik Al Tarog, and the Pasuk continues, and the innocent and the righteous you cannot put to death. Ki lo atzdik rasha, and Hashem will not make righteous the wicked. But the important part is the first part of the Pasuk, Midvar Sheker Tirchok. We have an obligation to distance ourselves from falsehood. Parenthetically, the Achronim, I'm sorry, yeah. That's an interesting question. When I read it, I assumed the former. but I would have to look into it, but I did assume the former when reading the Rabbinic Note. But that's a very good point. Thank you. So from this pasuk, Midrash Sheker, so the first part is the important part is the first part of the pasuk. The Torah informs us that we have to distance ourselves from Sheker. So the Achronim actually make an interesting point. This pasuk is formulated in a very interesting way. Generally speaking, if the Torah is going to say that it's prohibited to lie, it would say it in one of two ways. It would say either that do not lie, or it would say only say truth. But this formulation, you have to distance yourself from sheker, from falsehood, is a very interesting formulation. So the Rav Zalman Sarotskin is a commentator in Chumash called the Oznayim LaTorah. So he explains the significance behind this language. There's a halacha that for the sake of peace, it is permitted to lie. But the Gemara says that it's permitted, L'shana says tiburu mimi darki shalom, that for the sake of peace, one can be misleading, one can lie. And Rav Zalman Sarotskin explains, because we see based on this pasuk of Vayishlach Keter, because truth and falsehood are not absolute things. If the peace of a family is at stake, that's not lying. If you need to lie for the peace of one's family, to keep shalom bayis, that's not lying. That's keeping shalom bayis. Sheker and emes are not that black and white. And similarly speaking, sheker is not just saying an apple is an orange. You have to distance yourself from sheker. Even misleading someone, even not being overtly dishonest, is also sheker. So just like we see that by emes is not absolute, that sometimes it's permitted to lie for the sake of peace, sheker is also not absolute. Sometimes calling an orange an apple is not the only case of lying. Being misleading is lying. Giving someone a false impression is also lying. I'm sorry, yes?
How does that differ from the Arabs lying?
Maybe not.
Huh?
What do you mean by the Arabs lying? Them saying that we're not...
Well, they say they can say they want peace as an example, knowing that that's a lie.
So that would be a problem. I think that they're in violation of the Marsha Keterchak. So now that we have the basic idea, so what exactly is the biblical source behind this prohibition of Gnevas Das theoretically? So what exactly are the parameters? How far does it extend? So we've just been discussing commerce-related issues, selling something, giving someone a false impression when they purchase something, but is it beyond that? So take a look at source 6. Tanya, learned in a brisa, Hayarav Meir Omer, Al Yishariv Adam Lechaber Ulesot Etzlo, Yodea Bo She'enu Soed. Not invite someone for a meal knowing full well that they can't come. You can't go to someone, what are you doing Shabbos lunch, knowing full well, hey, I know they're out of town, and get the invite and not have them come. The little Yarbelo bit to Krovis, and we'll see that's not, it's not that simple, don't worry, we'll see at the end of the Gemara. Velo Yarbelo bit to Krovis, Vyodea Boshim Kabel. You can't shower someone with gifts and know full well that they're not going to take the gifts. This is a little bit more complicated. Generally, at my house, we just have bottles of cream malak or maybe kedem grape juice. It used to be they used to have barrels of wine in their house, big barrels of wine. So if someone were going to take the barrel of wine, open up that keg, and pour it for someone's glass, the guest that they invited over, poured in that guest's glass, they theoretically are going to incur a big loss because they have to drink all that wine. They're opening up a good barrel of wine. So a smart person, what they would do is, they would sell that barrel of wine in advance to the local merchant, and they'll get rid of the wine. And before the merchant collects that barrel of wine, he'll pour what he needs out for his guest, for himself. So the Gemara talks about a case, well, what if this host invites a guest, he takes his barrel of wine, opens it up right in front of the guest, pours the barrel of wine into the cup. So the guest is thinking, wow, that host really thinks I'm an important person. He's willing to incur that whole loss, opening up a whole barrel of wine for a little old me. That's pretty good. So, in the reality, what did he do? I would never open up this barrel of wine for this one guy. I sold it to the local merchant. I'm just taking the wine that I need before he actually comes and collects it. So to do that, to give the false impression to this guest that I opened it up expressly for him, that's a problem. Okay. And I only went into detail about this case because the Gemara further on is going to deal with this issue. We take a look, third to last line in this same source, the middle of the line. The Ha'ula Ikla Lebei Rav Yehuda. Ula was visiting the house of Rav Yehuda. Pasach lo chavios hamechuros lechentini. What did Rabbi Yehuda do? He did just that. He opened up for Ula, right in front of him, this barrel of wine, and poured it for him. And he, in fact, sold it in advance to the merchant. So he gave Ula this false impression. How did Rabbi Yehuda do that? So the Gemara answers, don't worry. Rabbi Yehuda was a firm Jew. He knew the halacha. Oduye ude. Either he informed him in advance. He told him, Ula, I don't want you to get the wrong idea. I actually sold this in advance to a merchant, and I'm not really going to incur any loss by pouring it for you. Don't worry, I want to invite you for Shabbos. I know you're not around, but I really want you to come. Or perhaps another possible answer, Shani Ula dechavev le Rabbi Yehuda. Or Ula was different. He was very dear to Rabbi Yehuda. Debalav hachi nami psuchi meftachla. And granted that Rabbi Yehuda did sell this barrel of wine to a merchant in advance, but even if he didn't, he still would have opened it up for Ula, because Ula is Ula. He loves Ula. Ula is someone who is dear to him. So even though Ula may have gotten the wrong idea, but because it's not false, because that admiration that Rabbi Yehuda had for him, the honor that Ula, that Rabbi Yehuda showed to Ula, was sincere. So also because of that, he thought it was permitted. So there's a hand that goes up before? Yes.
So the barrel of wine, right?
Yes.
The barrel of wine?
The way I understood it is... No, I understand. The way I understood it is that the condition of the sale that Rabbi Yehuda or that any host would have made with the local merchant would have been to take off his own needs, and then he would collect it after they...
Yeah, he'd take them out.
It could have been pragmatic. It could have been theoretically that the local merchant couldn't come to Sunday and he needs wine, it's Erev Shabbos, he needs for Shabbos. It could have just been very practical. But in order to just, but to address your point directly, you said, isn't it not Geneva, isn't he taking the wine that he sold to the merchant? So there are ways of getting around it. He theoretically stipulated with the merchant who he sold it to that I'm still going to take off my own personal needs.
And he
stipulates, correct.
Otherwise.
Right, exactly.
It's for
him. Right. So just keep that in mind, keep that in your back pocket. This case with Rabbi Yehuda, that he either informed him in advance, or that because he was so dear to him, there was no need to inform him. Just keep that in mind, and it's going to come back to us later. Okay. Turn to source 8. This is the Shulchan Aruch. This idea that Gneva Stas is beyond just commerce, it also applies to verbal issues, is codified in the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch says... Source 8. V'af lignov das habrias bitvarim, even to deceive people, to mislead people verbally, is also prohibited. What are the examples? Shemar she'ose bishvilo ve'ino ose aser. He makes it appear like he's doing something for someone, and in fact, he doesn't. That's prohibited. And he goes through the cases that we just read. Lo yisari v'shiyiso yimo. He should not invite him, knowing full well that he can't come, etc. So up until now, we were talking about the responsibility that the seller has to make sure that everything is clear, to make sure that no one is misled. But maybe there's a responsibility from the buyer. Right? When I was studying for the SATs, I remember, I had to make sure that I knew the key Latin phrases. So one of the first Latin phrases that I had to learn was caveatemptor, buyer beware. There are certain responsibilities that the buyer has. So let's take a look. Source 9, Gemara in Chulin, Daf Sadi Dalet, and Amud Beis. Marzutra bereid Rav Nachman, havak asl misichra lebei Mefuza. Marzutra was traveling from Sichra, the town of Sichra, to the house of Mefuza. The Rava, Rav Safra, havak asu lesichra. And Rava and Rav Safra were going to Sichra. Pagu adavi, they met in the street, they met each other. Who's Sabar? Marzutra thought to himself, Lahabihu de Ka'asu. They came to meet me. Amar lahu. So, and he said to them, Marzutra said to them, Lam lahu l'rabbanan l'torach v'asu kulei hai. Why'd you go so much out of your way just to see little old me? I'm flattered. Amar l'Rav Safra. Rav Safra, he didn't want any misunderstanding here. Anan lo havi divta ka asi ma. We didn't know that you were coming. We just met you on the street. We didn't know that you were here. He made it better though. He said, but if we would have known, we would have gone even further for you. Amalei Rava took his elbow and hit Rav Safra on the side. Rav Safra, my time honestly healthy. Why'd you tell Marzutra this? You're making Marzutra feel so bad. Marzutra is a, how often does this happen to us? You came to see me? Marzutra was embarrassed. Why'd you have to tell him? Marzutra is embarrassed that he came to the conclusion that you came to see me when in fact he didn't. But then Rav Safra, the honest Joe that he was, how could we not tell him? We're misleading him. Oh, so what's the response of Rava? This is important. Marzutra fooled himself. Marzutra had the option. Marzutra saw the scenario that was in front of him. He met them on the street. Okay, they could be coming for him, they could be not. But he came to that conclusion, and there was no reason for him to come to that conclusion. But the important idea that we see from here, the yisod that we see from here, is that we see there was a responsibility from the consumer. The buyer is not the one, the seller rather, I'm sorry. The seller is not the one who has to make sure that everything is up front. Sometimes the buyer must use a little bit of his own say, and to recognize the situation and to see what's going on himself. Now the question is, how do we understand the previous Gemara we saw? We saw the Gemara with the barrels of wine. Rabbi Yehuda opened up a barrel of wine and poured it for Ula, and the Gemara was bothered by that. Rabbi Yehuda had to inform him. But over here with Marzutra and Rava, Rava said, Marzutra, Yehuda kamate nafshe, he is deluding himself. So which is it? Those seem to be a little bit inconsistent. Let's clarify this. Let's make sure it's clear. In the previous Gemara, with Rabbi Huda and with Ula, Rabbi Huda couldn't just open up a barrel and pour it for Ula, and Ula should have realized that there's a distinct possibility that Rabbi Huda sold the remainder of the barrel to a merchant. Rabbi Huda had to go out of his way and make it clear to Ula that it was sold in advance and that don't think that I actually did this expressly for you. But yet, in this Gemara over here on Daf Tzadid Aleph Amud Beis, where Rava doesn't have to inform Marzutra. He can lead Marzutra on and let Marzutra think for himself that, hey, you came to visit me. So how do we understand these two Gemaras? So, not my question, Tosis' question. In source 10, the second line, middle of the line, Tosis says, L'kach mire, dehasam bistam, just let's understand the scenario. Rabbi Huda opens up the vat in front of Ula, pours it directly into Ula's glass, sees it, open it up right in front of him. The natural response is, he did it for me. He didn't assume that he sold it to Mechendin. But what's the case over there with Marzutra and Rava? Now continue, this is the important part. He should have realized that they didn't come specifically to see Marzutra. They came for themselves, or to recognize that possibility. He met them on the street. It wasn't as if necessarily that Rava and Rav Safra were at his house. They met each other. Pogu hadadi, that's the lashon of the Gemara. They met each other. Okay, so who's to say that they came to see you? He was jumping to conclusions. So the jumping to the conclusions that the seller is not responsible to the buyer. So there's a distinction between these two cases. The case of Rabbi Huda and Ula, it seemed to be clear. There was a possibility that Rabbi Huda sold it in advance to a merchant. But it seemed as if he was doing it expressly for him. Over there, it's a responsibility of the seller to inform the buyer. But in this case with Marzutra and Rava, they pogu hadadi, they met each other on the street. Marzutra jumped to a conclusion, and so when he jumped to a conclusion, the seller is not responsible to clarify the matter. Okay. Now, let's try to understand that there we're talking about when is it called lying, when is it not called lying, but maybe there are times when it's actually permitted to lie. We referenced earlier that it's permitted for the sake of peace to lie. So maybe there are other scenarios, and that may impact on our question that we asked earlier, the two cases, just to remind you, the Michael Jordan and the Hair Club for Men questions. So the Gemara that became famous from a song, right, the 11th source, the Gemara Kesubas on Daf Tes Zayin of the days. Tan Rabbanan, Ketza Narakdim Lefnei HaKala, right, how do you dance before a Kala? Beishamai Omrin Kala Kmos Shihi. Beis Shammai says that when you praise a Kala, don't go overboard. You have to praise her with what she is praiseworthy for. If she has beautiful hair, the hair is what you praise. If she doesn't have, if she has beautiful hair and she doesn't have beautiful eyes, don't go near the eyes. She has beautiful hair. Ubeis Hillel Omrim, Kala na v'chasuka. Every Kala is beautiful and graceful. Wow, beautiful and graceful, everybody. No exceptions to the rule. Amaluhu Beis Shammai le Beis Hillel. Beis Shammai says to Beis Hillel, Hari Shaisa Chigeres, Osum, what if she was lame? What if she was blind? Omrim lo kalana v'chasuda, are you still going to say that she's beautiful, she's graceful? V'atorah Omra, Midvar Sheker Tirachak, the Torah says, we have to distance ourselves from lying. So Beis Hillel, how can you sanction this? How can you say to every single Kala, you are beautiful and you are graceful, when clearly that's not true. Amr lehem beis hillel beis shammai, beis hillel says to beis shammai, lidiv reichen, even according to you, beis shammai, mi shalokach mekach ram min hashuk, someone who makes a bad purchase from the shuk, yishavchenu be'enav, o yigenenu be'enav. Do you say he made a good purchase or a bad purchase? If my wife came back from, what's that, Lohmann's, Fox's, okay, and she said to me, Ira, I just bought this dress. I can't return it. How do I look? It's a loaded question, right? I'm going to make it very clear, the only words that will come out of my mouth is, you look beautiful. Right? Those are the only words that are going to come out of my mouth. So, Beis Hillel knew how to get to Beis Shammai. Beis Shammai, when your wife comes back from Fox's, you are not going to tell her that she doesn't look beautiful. You know quite well what to say. So even according to you, Beis Shammai, a person who buys a purchase that in your eyes is not a good purchase, Yishav Chenu Be'enav, it's beautiful, Yiganenu Be'enav, it's terrible. What are you going to say? Even Beis Shammai, it appears, would even agree that you'd say that it's a good purchase. So Beis Hillel is now going in for the 1-2 punch. Hav Yomer Yishav Chenu Be'enav. So the Kanam Rechachamim will only die to Shal Adam Rebbe Sinai Brios, that a person should always have a good disposition to everyone that he meets. And of course, even Beis Shammai, it seems to be logical that we should even say Kalana V'chasuda. And Tosfos, I'll just say it outside, but Tosfos, when explaining the opinions of Beis Hillel Beis Shammai, explains it as we said, that Beis Hillel says even to praise her with something that she's not praiseworthy for. And what's the rationale? Tosfos explains, we can read inside it, take a look at source 12, the second line, okay. The second last word. Ubeis Hillel Omrim, Yishavchu Legamre. You give her complete praise. Dekeshemas Kirid, Ma Sheyeshba L'Shvach, Mechlal L'Shar L'Gnai. Because when you mention only one thing, L'Shvach, it implies that everything else is L'Gnai. When I come back from a wedding, or when my wife comes back from a wedding, and my mother-in-law asks her, how did the bride look? What did she look like? So, if my wife is Bathsheba. So if Bathsheba were to say to my mother-in-law, she had the most beautiful glasses. I've never seen, whoo, beautiful. It's not the nicest thing you could say. You don't want to comment on a kala that has the most beautiful glasses. So to highlight one characteristic of the kala, it implies that everything else wasn't really up to par, wasn't up to sniff. So Beis Hillel says, Beis Shammai, I can't subscribe to your opinion because just by saying that she has beautiful glasses, she has beautiful hair, even though her eyes are not so nice, I can't say that because by definition it implies that she isn't a beautiful kala and that would be very hurtful. So Beisel says you have to go full out, a full meal, a full banquet. She's beautiful. She's a kavana chasuda. She's graceful and she's beautiful. But still, how do we understand? This is lying. How does Beisel permit this? Okay, you could say that Kala is beautiful and she's graceful, but she may not be. How do I do this? How is it permitted? So, in source 13, the Chidushi Agados of the Maharal. Okay, very often this is the commentary of the Maharal on the Agadata of the Gemara. Very often it's actually very esoteric. But sometimes you can get a nice piece that could speak to, at least me, I'm a human being. I can't really get the esoteric things very well. So he explains a very nice idea. Why is this not called lying? The last word on the first line. V'yaf al gav shahakala ba'atzma inana v'chasuda. Even though the kala may not be beautiful, she may not be graceful. Mikol moko, klapi habal shebocharba hi chasuda be'inav. I'm sorry. You may not think she's beautiful, but there's a guy in this room that does. The chasam thinks she's beautiful. V'zesh omar, mi shalokach mekach ruah min hashuk, yishevchenu o yigenenu be'inav. Klomar, shein roi yishe yigenenu, achar shalokach mekach harei hi na be'inav. V'udin hakala, ein rotzim l'shabeach hakala mitzad atzma, rak kasher hu mitzad hachasam. It's not lying. Why? Because the chasam that picked her to be his wife thinks she's a beautiful girl. So, who is this praise for? It's for the chassan to hear. When you say, kala the chasuda, what essentially are you saying? Chassan, you picture yourself a kala na the chasuda. You chassan, you picture yourself a beautiful and graceful wife. How do I know that? Well, I'm at the chuppah, aren't I? When a person brings back, when my wife brings back from Fox's, from Lohmann's, the beautiful lime green with neon stripes going down into dress, okay, I may say to return it, but I would never say that ever, even if it can be returned. But she obviously thought it was beautiful because she walked out of the store and she purchased it. So from her perspective, it's not lying. From her perspective, it is a beautiful thing and it is a good purchase. This perhaps, one may think, may shed light on this case, on the Hair Club for Men. Right? So again, just to review, what did we say? What was the scenario? What was the case that we were talking about? So you have not only the president, but also a client. So you have the person who has been using this product, and he says, this has revolutionized my life. I have a new car, I have a new girlfriend, I have a new office, I'm making millions of dollars. And it's the best thing that I ever did. But for the consumer, that might not be true. That might not be the best thing. The product may give him a ranch, or even if the product works for him, then still, it doesn't make his life as content as the commercial makes it seem. So one may argue, but from the perspective of the person who is advertising it, or is a person that it's truthful to, the person who's advertising it, the president and the client, he, it revolutionized his life. You know, he's making all these commercials. He's the president because of this product. It worked out well for him. So maybe we'll say that it's a good thing. So Rabbi Dr. Aaron Levine, who is a professor of economics at Yeshiva University, and he's also an adjunct dayan on the basin of the Biblical Council of America. He's an expert on the topic of commerce in Jewish law. Luckily, I took him for two semesters. So he says there's a very basic distinction between this Gemara and Ksubis and in our case over here. What's the distinction? As we said before, the praise that's being bestowed upon the kala is directed to one audience and one audience alone, to the chassan. The chassan, obviously, he bought into this. The chassan's marrying the girl. So it's localized to him. So it's not a lie because he believes it's true. But when the client and the president gets up for the commercial and makes this whole pitch, it's not directed to a localized audience of one who obviously thinks that it's true. It's to millions and millions of people that may not think that this is true. So this could theoretically be a problem. Again, ask your local Orthodox rabbi, who luckily for many of you is right in the back, so you could speak with him. I'm not going to decide this matter, but it's what to think about, and that theoretically could be a problem. The last source, which I'll say outside, which will impact our first case. There is a Mishnah on Daf Samach and Aleph above Metziah. The Mishnah says, according to Rabbi Yehuda says, Lo yichalek hachedvani klois ve'agozim litinokos. Excuse me. Rabbi Yehuda says, a merchant, let's take for example, a person that sells pencils. The pencil seller, okay, he can't, whenever the children walk in, he can't give them jelly beans and Hershey's Kisses. So in order that, why? That they'll come into the store and they'll buy pencils from him. But the Chachamim, who we paskin like, who we accept their opinion lehalacha, say that it's permitted. Okay, it's a nice Mishnah, but how does that impact our beloved Chicago Michael Jordan? How does that impact him? So there's a fantastic Torah journal. It's called Tchumen. And one of the writers very often, his name is Rabbi Dr. Itamar Lahaftig. So he has a whole article on advertising in halacha. So he explains, he understands this Mishnah based on the Rambam. What is the Mishnah talking about? The Mishnah is talking about the case of Michael Jordan. When the storekeeper, when the person who sells pencils is giving out the candy, and he's giving out the nuts, so he's now creating a subconscious association in the minds of these children between his pencils and between the candy that they received. So Rabbi Huda says in his prohibited sense, hey, that's giving us nuts. The reason why they're buying your pencils and not somebody else's pencils is because you're misleading them. You're creating a false sense of pencil candy. Right? This is not pencil candy. This is just pencils. And it's no better, the product is no better than the product that the other stores sell. But the Chachamim say, caveat emptor, buyer beware. Use your head. Okay. So fine. So he's using a gimmick. He's using this subconscious tactic of making you associate the pencils with the Hershey's Kisses that the store seller sells. That's your problem. You have a mind. Keep that in mind. I just want to conclude, there's one other aspect that we didn't really mention that's also important, is the Michael Jordan commercial. So there are two angles that you could come with from the Michael Jordan commercial. On the one hand, there's the subconscious idea which we discussed. But in addition, what do people really think that if I wear Air Jordans, I will jump higher, I will be better? I'm not speaking for Nike, I didn't run the tests. I'm speaking theoretically. I don't know. It could theoretically be that if I put a pair of Air Jordans on me right now, I can dunk. But let's say for argument's sake that I can't dunk. So is that a problem? Is that going to get us? So the rule of thumb that many poskim, they flesh this out, and Rabbi Aaron Levine also says the same idea, is that we have to take a poll. When people, I actually was going to show this, there's a Bud Light commercial from Super Bowl last year, where I was doing some research in terms of what exactly to show. So there's a Bud Light commercial that says, Bud Light, tastes great, less filling, and now you can fly. He's holding the Bud Light, and now he's flying in the air. So is that Dvar Sheker Tirchak? Am I going to think, if I drink Bud Light, I will now be able to take my Bud Light, fly right out the door, and go right home, in the air? Dvar Sheker Tirchak, it's going to make me think I'm going to fly.
Depends how many Bud Lights you drink.
Right. I'm done, right. So the basic premise is, what do people think? When people see this commercial, a thinking person, when he sees the commercial, does he really think that Bud Light will make him fly? And similarly with Air Jordan, do they think that will actually improve his game? That's the critical point to think about. It was a pleasure, and hopefully this afternoon when you watch your commercials, so just watch them with a little bit of a grain of salt.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry.